The Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook. Use the promo code RTRS and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rice Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And the sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe, Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, now available in 44 states online at statesidevodka.com. On today's show, things are going well. It makes me nervous, but things are going well. Ben Simmons seems to have woken up. Joel Embiid continues to march toward being the actual MVP, not just the, we say he's the MVP because we love him MVP, and just really out of control. Sixers sweep the Celtics, beat the Pistons, even though they only half tried. Pretty unbelievable. We will talk about all of that on today's pod. Coming up on Tuesday, a brand new Carl Landry Record Club podcast. We'll talk about three albums, Miley Cyrus and Her Dead Pets, a record from Estero and a band called The Ark. You can subscribe anywhere. You get your podcasts at just search for Carl Landry Record Club. What else do I have? Oh, yeah, I mentioned Stateside Urban Craft Vodka. You can get Stateside in 44 states now. Up until about a month ago, you could only order here in PA and I think DC. Now 44 states. It's the only vodka you should be drinking. Distilled 7 times. Gluten-free, kosher, carb-free, delicious. Did I mention gluten-free? Made here in Philly. 44 states. Go to statesidevodka.com. You got to be 21 to drink, and please do it responsibly. And we want to send our love to Greg from Colony Meadery and his family. His dog, Diz, if you remember Diz, a bulldog from the Rights Tricky Sanchez Zoomathon. He was like the star of the Zoomathon, basically just showing up in the middle of it. And Diz, I learned yesterday, passed away in December. So we want to send our love to Greg and his family, the entire Colony family, and Diz. Diz was a good dog. It was a really, if you go back and watch the Zoomathon, the video of it, we posted it, is funny. He sleeps his way right through it, which I think a lot of people, Mike most notably, wishes he had as well. So we love you, Greg. We love you, Diz. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who, if he could, would be waiting in Napa for Ben and Joel. That is Mike Levin.
It's all happening.
Yeah, it seems like it is, huh?
It is a very, very, a week that was really tailor-made to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beat the Celtics twice, won a back-to-back in this kind of a sleepwalking game on the road. There should not be a road back-to-back this season. Like, it just shouldn't be happening. That's fine. It shouldn't be happening, but it's fine. And they've friggin' signed a second two-way player.
Oh, I didn't even have to talk about that. Right,
that's right, because that's my department, yep. And I am in charge of only that.
Mm-hmm.
It is Rajon Tucker replacing Dakota Mathias. Rajon Tucker started college at Florida Gulf Coast.
Okay.
And then went to Arkansas Little Rock. If you watch any tape of Rajon, you can see that he is a big-time dunk guy.
Mm.
He's really only like six. He's pretty small. He's like 6'3 to 6'5. I've seen him measured at different lengths. Okay. But he's like thick as hell, bouncy as hell. He's kind of like a little bit like Eric Bledsoe as a wing.
Yeah, because you remember when Eric Bledsoe was younger, I think LeBron called him like mini LeBron or something. Like his whole bit was that he was super athletic then.
So, I mean, Rajon's, he's good. Like, it's, you know, he definitely could have been drafted a couple years ago. He was on the Bucks G League team for a little while, and then he played a little bit with the Jazz NBA team. And I think he's an NBA player. I think he's got the physicality. He can handle the ball a little bit, which is more, and shoot a little bit more than you expect for, like, the kind of, you know, basically Zaire type looking body that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He is not as good on defense. He's undisciplined on defense. He kind of ball watches a lot, but he's young and he's talented, and we need more guys that can sort of be sort of big body, thick wing defenders. I like this. I like the signing. I think it's an improvement over Dakota Mathias. I think Isaiah Joe stepping up and Korkmaz being back meant that Mathias was pretty expendable. And now we have a more of a developmental guy in there that is possibly possibly playable at some point. And I'm close to saying Rajon Tucker meaningful minute. I'm so close to saying,
well, hold on,
Rajon Tucker one meaningful playoff minute. That's where I'm at right now.
Don't do it yet. Don't do it because it didn't work out. Super
it did work
well.
Out.
Well, okay.
He played a meaningful minute.
The biggest debate in the history of our pod is whether
Zaire in the playoffs, when it counted, meaningful minute counts. There was also a really nice story that Kyle Newbeck reported of Rajon Tucker. He was with the Wisconsin Herd, which is Milwaukee's G League team.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten called up to the Jazz, I think like during the game or right before the game, so he wasn't playing. And instead of leaving the arena, he stayed and didn't play in the game because he didn't want to get hurt, but he stayed and like acted as the water boy for the team. And the guys really appreciate it. So good guy, good teammate. A lot of very, you know, Rashawn level dunks at like 6'4"-ish. I think he will be a favorite if he comes in some garbage time.
It also gets rid of, there were some very good that I heard from I would say Sixers media and then a listener emailed in that the theory behind the Dakota Mathias cut was that if the Sixers had fewer rostered players, the chances of them having to play with eight guys would go down because there was less of a chance they would have eight players, which I hadn't thought about that.
That was interesting.
Yeah, it was a very interesting theory and seemed very Maury, like Kinky-esque, like can't play if we don't have guys, like blah, blah, blah.
We could have our team.
Right. So I thought it was interesting, but then them basically signing a guy within a week made that less likely. Yeah, that was him. The Apple Podcast five-star review of the week, we're at 2,842 five-star ratings. When we get to 3,000, I'll read all the reviews from 2,000 to 3,000 on one podcast. This comes from Ujikik. It's hard, that's his username on Apple. The subject line is shout out to my dad. He says, my dad and I have been listening to you guys for a while and it would mean the world to him if you read this. Thanks. But the problem is we don't know who your dad is, so don't even know who you are. So shout out to your dad. So, you know, a big couple of games. Of course, we start off with the two-way guy, but a big couple of games. I want to start with Embiid, like, because is that all right? I think we have to almost. Like, we're sort of at the point where we've obviously seen him do this in spurts, right? Even for, you know, 5 to 7 games, he would be like this. And we would see the explosion games, like the Lakers game. And he would be great at times. But it seemed like he was sort of, front runner's the wrong word, but when things were going well, Joel would go well. But like, it seemed like it was very up and down. And to be clear, even when he was not great, he was still very, very good. But there was just, there's just a very clear difference in this season, and it seems to be building upon itself because I would say we mentioned in the first Boston game that, you know, he had 42-10 or whatever it was, 41-10, and you almost didn't even notice it. It was a very like easy 41-10, whatever it was. Then in the second Boston game, he is 38-11, and it almost seemed the same way. He only played 30 minutes in that game. And then against Detroit, they never doubled him. So and like Plumlee had just no chance against him. But it all seems so calm, and he seems in such control of it, and it seems to be like building upon itself. He seems to be getting better as the season goes on. And this whole thought of him being MVP is a real thing now. Like he just, I'd rather he not play in back-to-backs, especially on the road back-to-back. But he came in, would he have 33-12 or something against the Pistons? I'm sort of blown away that it just keeps happening. I mean, I don't think he's had a so-so game all year.
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. He's playing absolute MVP level. It is, you know, they keep... You start to, it's easy to cherry pick stats and like, mm-hmm. I'm sure, you know, fans of teams that have like almost very good guys get like, hey, he's on a list with like all these iconic players. But mm-hmm. like Embiid is starting to get like, there's a bunch of those, whether it's like, you know, just Sixers list, like Wilt and Charles, like the amount of, he just had his 50th 30-10 game of his career. And I remember before, When he was hurt, or when it was probably in the 2014 era, it was like the Sixers hadn't had a 30-point scorer in seasons, and now Embiid has had 50, 30, and 10 games only in his – it's his fifth season, but, you know, partial in a couple of them. And that's amazing. I mean, it is the fact that he is this good, he is shooting – he's shooting insane. Like, obviously his conditioning is very, very good, but right now I am – I have to believe, just to sort of protect myself a little bit, that some of the shooting is unsustainable.
Yeah.
He's shooting over 40% from three. He's shooting 58%.
But by the way, hold on. He's shooting over 40% from three, but it's like 40.7%. And mm-hmm. he's, you know what I mean? Like, it's not...
That's not the issue. I mean, it's just that it's the highest he's ever shot by right. quite a bit. And he's shooting an incredibly high percentage on those face-up mid-range shots. His career high in 2-point percentage coming into this year was 2 years ago at 53.5%. He's now at 58.9%, and so that's got to go down. It has to. I mean, I think there's a lot of exceptional stuff that there's spacing there, and he'll kick it out. Weirdly, his assists are down, but I just think that's because there's a lot of hockey assists in there and swinging and rotating and mm-hmm. stuff. He's shooting a career high from the line, like all this stuff. It's good. It's all good indicators. I don't think it's going to like fall off. I have to just sort of protect myself that like he's going to get cold for a little bit. But across the board, I mean, he's just unbelievable. He's the best. He's taken a more clearer role as a leader of this team. You can tell, you know, maybe it's just because of last year, how
bad
little fun everyone was having.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's just doing. He's doing everything. He's absolutely doing everything, and it's. I enjoyed seeing him get pissed off at the refs in the second Boston game. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely mauling him, and wasn't getting called. He obviously gets a lot of calls sometimes that he shouldn't, and he's working the system the way that Harden does, and I'm sure that is upsetting for teams. But there were a couple there that was frustrating, and he started to kind of get tunnel vision and put his head down a little bit. But I thought it was good that. And impressive that he sort of like calmed himself down and didn't keep doing that. Like kind of worked his teammates in there and wasn't so demonstrative. But I did love him smacking the shit out of the water bottle from that guy's hands. That was good.
Oh, that was a great, great video. All-time yeah. video. Yeah.
And so it's nice. I mean, it's a long season. There's no fans. If you need to start to vilify the refs and get fired up, then that rules. I mean, he's just... You know, we'll get to the him and Simmons of it, but him on his own right now is just it's like genuinely beautiful to watch, and it's so exciting, and I feel incredibly lucky that he's healthy and playing well and happy. I mean, it's just I'm like a proud grandma. I feel so happy.
The as far as like the field goal percentage, finally someone said it because I've been saying it for a while. It made me feel good when Doc mentioned that Doc compared him to Kevin Garnett and. What's it called? Patrick Ewing. And I had made the Patrick Ewing comparison a bunch of times. So to the field goal percentage thing, he's shooting about the same mid-range jumpers that he did last year and the year before. But there is definitely he's shooting them in an easier, like, fewer of them are off the dribble and fewer of them are fadeaways. And so many more of them are just I have all this room around me and the guy's worried about me going by him. So I am able to shoot this more comfortably. And I agree with you that his field goal percentage will likely go down eventually. But there is something that appears more sustainable about the way he's shooting and the situations that he's shooting than I felt before.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly also just put the work in. Like, he's clearly just really, he's got that little, like, one dribble, like, act like I'm going to drive through you and then pull up. And it's just, because he's so big, you can't, that shot is unblockable. So I think he's got that there. And I think they're setting him up more in the middle of the court. He's shooting less, like, around double teams, which he did sometimes last year. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, he's averaging his fewest field goal attempts per 36 minutes right now of his career by a full field goal. And I think that's because he's going to the line a little bit more. And also he's not forcing it. He's got more teammates that he trusts. So I think the shot selection, taking the shots that he wants to take, the Sixers having just a generally more dynamic offense is allowing him to sort of cut off the bad shots. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's hard to really talk about how good he is and how fortunate we are. And just, I want him to be the best player in a championship team. I really want it. I want it for us. I want it for him. And he's playing at that level right now. And I just desperately hope that it holds up.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's awesome.
And, you know, the more years he can play at this level, obviously, the better chance he'll have at winning a championship as the best player on a championship team, because this player, you would imagine, would, you know, like, this player at some point, if he's able to continue to do this, will end up as the best player on a championship team. So that's what's exciting about it, because and honestly, I would say the only thing that I've noticed that's a little more disturbing this year than last year is it seems like he has once again fall on the floor six times a game guy. Like, there are more times this year than I noticed last year that I worry that he gets hurt. You know, like, it reminds me of the first 2 years. So I wish he would be on the floor a little bit less. But
yeah.
But aside from that, his numbers so far this year, just for a little bit of context, he's averaging 27.7 points, 11.5 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, a true shooting percentage of 67%. And his minutes, by the way, down to 31.6. He was up around 34 a couple of weeks ago. But even the Boston game, like I mentioned, the second Boston game, he only played 30 minutes, which seems impossible with the amount of points he scored with his numbers. But, you know, If he can be, you know, I mentioned, if he can be on the 30 side of 32 rather than 34 side of 32, I think that's better for everyone.
That to me is marginal. I'd rather try to sit him on steal a back-to-back that you don't have to play him in, that kind of thing. I think that's, if he wants to play in the game, you know, the game dictates it and he needs to get in there and they're losing and stuff, then I think he's going to play, and it feels like artificial to hold him out of that. But my mind, it's like, let's just take a game where you know, this is a 2-game stretch in Detroit. They have another game tomorrow. And so I get why he's there, but it'd be nice sometimes to just be like, you know, his back hurts, he tweaked it, whatever, let's just take a day.
Mike, on a Friday night, I was here alone with my dog. My wife was not here on Friday night, so it's just me and Rebel. And there was a disturbing thing that happened at night when we went to bed, and I went to get him into his big barker. He stood in front of the big barker and he just stared at me, and I could not figure out why he was just staring at me. And it was because my wife makes his bed every night before he climbs into it, moves the blankets in a certain way, and then moves like a little stuffed animal that he uses kind of as a pillow in a certain way. And he does not get into the bed until the blankets are put in the right way. It is fucked up. That's what I'll tell you. It is some fucked up stuff. In any case, he loves his big barker. He's been sleeping in it for a couple of years now, 2.5 years. Always ends up in our bed like in the middle of the night, but will only sleep in his big barker because he knows it is good for him and it's comfortable. It's the only dog bed on the market engineered by experts to support your dog's joints. It's real important shit, man. Like your dog should not be sleeping on a shitty bed, which is basically like laying on the blanket. On a blanket on the floor. It's not how they should sleep. Big Barker knew that. They came, they saw, and they kicked dog bed ass. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. Bigbarker.com/Ricky. Join one of the hundreds and hundreds of other Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners who have purchased Big Barker dog beds for their dog. When you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, you get the Process Pup patch. Two of them, and a handwritten note from the owner of Big Barker, Eric, which is a nice little touch that he adds as well. And all this stuff about it being better for your dog's joints, proven by Penn Vet. They did a study on 40 dogs, found an improvement in joint function, less pain, improvement in joint stiffness, and just like an overall quality of life improvement. BigBarker.com/Ricky. You get a 10-year warranty on the thing. The foam doesn't flatten, or they replace it for free. A 1-year at-home trial, they'll give you a full refund if it, if for any reason you don't like it, and they'll even pay for shipping. And it is, of course, handmade right here in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. Bah! To be clear, I'm not suggesting he have a minute limit. What I'm suggesting is that like whatever his, obviously they all have normal rotations when they come in and out. My point is that his normal rotation plan should be to be about 30 minutes. And what that does is that it would allow him to, when there's games that he needs to be in there 36, he's in there 36. But then when he, when they have a big lead or something like that, he can, like the whole thing is just set at a different plan. And River said his plan was 33 or 34. And obviously, like they've made some sort of adjustment because it's come down, you know. I'm not saying he should have a minute limit. I'm just saying his target should probably be a little bit lower.
All right, let's talk about Ben.
Yeah.
Because the it's been a obviously fraught season for everyone. Mm-hmm. The people were attaching picks to get rid of Ben Simmons last week. I thought that was premature. And he took over at the end of the Boston game on offense. I thought he played excellent defense on Jaylen Brown all night. And then at the beginning of this Detroit game, he sort of kept that energy up. And in between those, like the fourth quarter of Boston and the first quarter of Detroit, he had like, what, like 19 points in like a 12-minute span?
He had eight in the first quarter of the Detroit game, and then 11 in the fourth quarter. I think 11 in the fourth quarter of the Boston game.
And it's just exciting, man. I mean, like Embiid calling for more Simmons pick and rolls, him like putting his head down and getting there, but not trying to bowl his way through, kind of being a little bit more using his footwork to get there. It seemed like he went away from that, or he was injured and couldn't quite have the precision, whatever it was. It looked like he just had fewer options, and all of a sudden his speed seemed to come back to him, his like footwork and sort of finesse came back to him. I'd still obviously like that final one more dribble and just dunk on people, but like just seemingly I don't know, I'm not like predicting what it was or whatever, but like something switched, something flipped, and he looks really a lot better. And then we got a love fest after the game that we can talk about.
Yeah. I thought the last two games were not proof, but would suggest that it wasn't really, that the main thing was not a physical issue. Well, I almost thought there was an and one in the Boston game where the layup sort of went like over the, like he banked it in. Like it was like sort of like a floater off the wrong foot, and he banked in the layup. And it's almost looked like something like clicked or something went for him that he did not expect to go for him or maybe hadn't gone before. There was certainly a – there might have been something going on with his body, but it seems more likely to me, or at least sort of likely, that there was a mental thing going on. And not a Markelle Fultz-Yips thing, but like he did not – he was not comfortable. Like, he could not find his spot. He obviously, not obviously, but potentially wasn't as sure of his place in whatever the offense was. And he was struggling to find that. And I think just, you know, what's it called? Like, announcers say this sometimes, like former players, that sometimes you just need to watch the ball go through the hoop to be more confident shooting it. And he had hit some free throws or whatever. And I don't think it was about watching the ball going through the hoop. I think it was about like his drives working. And I it almost seems like a couple worked and it just gave him the confidence and the sort of motivation to make more of them happen. And I think your defense also thrives on that. Like it's very tough to just defend hard all game without shots going down. There's very few players that are like that in the NBA. To me, that something clicked. Like, something happened in the Boston fourth quarter that made him feel better about doing it, that looked that way to me. It obviously carried over into the Detroit game.
Yeah, I mean, his defense on Jeremy was ridiculous. Jeremy had a terrible game, and he's had a great season, and we obviously love Jeremy, but like, Simmons is just, he's when he's locked in on that end, it's really nearly impossible for guys to score on him. And that's such a weapon to have in such a wing-heavy league and a wing-heavy conference like the East. The thing I was, you know, sometimes drives, you know, he doesn't have great touch around the rim. Like, we know that he's that middle distance. It's a little bit touch and go. I thought his like little hooks and little scoops have been looking a little softer and better. And so that's nice. I hope that continues and he's willing to take those. The thing I was most excited about is he got to the line so many times and he hit those shots at the end of the Detroit game. Jeremy put him on the line saying, you know, Detroit's up two or down two with like 20 seconds left. They foul Simmons on purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if he makes this, then that means the game's pretty much over. It's a 4-point game. And he made both. And I thought that's huge for confidence. He's now shooting 66% from the line on the most attempts per game that he's had in his career. That's both career highs. That's good. I mean, this is all
the
good stuff.
The last I looked, he was at like 5 attempts per game. Is that not where he's at?
He's at, per 36, he's at 5.9, which is his career high. 5.7 had been his career high 2 years
ago. Okay.
And it's good. I mean, keep it up. Like, I think that once his drives continued to, you know, they never like ignored him, right? The league still respects him as a post-up player, as a driver, both in transition and out. The defense collapses on him because he's so fast and big. So that's always there. But now that, once they start falling a little bit, he gets a little more confidence. Then they keep like kind of working hand in hand and going with each other. And it was really nice to hear. Obviously, this is just tailor made for me. Come on, this is like right in my pocket. Embiid and Ben talk about how they're texting more.
Oh yeah.
Embiid texted him after the game saying he needs to find him more on duck-ins. Mm-hmm. They both say that it's different this year. We love playing with each other. Embiid being the one to call for the more Ben pick and rolls at the end of the Boston game. All that shit. They're having a good time.
There was an underreported thing where Simmons said he had actually sent a link to a Airbnb list he had started for Napa.
That's good.
You know, that sleeps.
That seems more like a Tobias thing, that he would be the one to set that up. But I think that Ben, like, looking around and saying, like, these are my favorites, I think is actually pretty important.
Yep.
I mean, even the, like, you know, reporters are starting to get on this, like, in the pregame shoot around, like, Tobias and Embiid and Dwight like rapping the whatever song it is on there.
Yeah, I didn't know what the song was.
It's really very. It's the vibes are. I'm shaken awake at night by the vibes on this team. It is keeping me. I'm not getting any good sleep because the vibes are just electrifying all of my joints. It's cool. I mean, the fact that the two of them, like, I don't know. We don't know how how close Ben Simmons was to getting traded. Probably reasonably close.
Yeah.
I think that Morey was willing to include him, but if there, you know, and I don't know what Embiid wanted. We don't know what Embiid wanted, but maybe he felt like I want to win it as the best player on the team, and Harden coming here would mean that I'm not the best player on the team, or I'm not the option, or whatever it is. I think him and, you know, the thing that Brett was trying to get Joel and Ben to recognize for a long time is that, like, this is your team. It's going to go with you guys if you guys do it together. And it seemed like it took a couple years to get there, and it seems like whether through just time and being with each other and being kind of the last vestiges of that bad Sixers era, or Doc's leadership and better shooting around them, I think it's all of it probably. Mm-hmm. It's really starting to click for them, and you can tell them they're like, you can see it on the court. You can see the, like, you know, they have that little snug pick and roll, and then they have the counter to that, which is the occasional Joel's going to come over to set a screen, and then Ben throws that lob. And he threw it last night, and Joel missed the dunk. But that's happened a couple times this season.
Joel's not a super great
lob catcher.
Lob guy,
no,
yeah.
He for just sure. doesn't get but it that I think, and on those duck ins, like, Ben is open a lot, like underneath the basket, and they just missed him a couple times because defenses are quickish to rotate, but he's open a lot, and I think that there's going to be more of those opportunities as the season goes on. Seth found him on a nice little roll to the rim one time, and I was like, it should be so many of those that Ben gets, and there's just not enough great passers on this team. But I think just with time, Tobias is pretty unwilling to make those kinds of passes. Embiid is willing but isn't great at those, just like when he's been sealing his guy underneath and he's open. But I think it's going to keep happening, and I think Seth is helpful to that. And it's just nice. It's nice to see everybody having a good time, because no one is having fun this season, it seems, in the league, I mean, because there's so much, you know, prohibited. But
yeah, there's just not a lot of hangout time.
Yeah, but the Sixers are the Sixers are absolutely leading the league in vibes, 100%. The Lakers, I watch a lot. They're not leading the league in vibes. They're a good team. They're great. They've probably gotten better, but...
Well, they have fake vibes. That LeBron-AD relationship is the fakest shit I've ever seen.
I don't agree. I think it's very real. I think that AD is actually taking a step forward and taking ownership and being, like, pissed off when they don't play up to the level and stuff. And so I'm, like, a little impressed, but it's not, like... It doesn't seem like it's fun there. It seems more like it's, here's what we have to do to get back to where we were last year. And so... And the Clippers, obviously, their vibes are never going to be good. They're the Clippers. The Sixers, 100%. The Sixers and maybe the Cavs, I guess, are the league leaders in vibes.
Do you remember, we had Dave Hartley on from War on Drugs a couple of years ago, and he texted me after the Boston game. And he went from, like, anti-Harden trade to, like, yeah, I guess we got to do it. And then when they won the Boston game, he texted me, and he was like, look, man, I don't really care about a championship. All I care, these guys all like each other and they're having fun and this is what I wanted and they all get along. And I was just like, I responded back, are we really doing this again?
It feels good. No, this is the best it's ever felt. It's 100% the best it's ever felt. And of course it's happening in January, which is the Sixers month.
That's our month.
That is our month, and it will always be our month. Once it comes Valentine's Day, everything gets fucked up. But for now we are treasuring January. It's very good. And Tobias is just, like, extremely solid. He's just
50-40-90, buddy.
Basically, I mean, he's hitting everything. He has so many spots on the court where it's like, if I get to this spot, it really doesn't matter what the defense does. It just, there are, like, little elbows, little wing shots that he's just like, I'm going to make this. And I've been impressed by the willingness to shoot quickly, especially, you know, in transition on threes. And I've obviously, having been talked about it for years, loving the continued improvement on defense. Loving it. He definitely competes, too.
He definitely competes, has
better hands. I think he's just quicker. It's just, there's a lot of good shit happening. And while we're talking about defense, Shake Milton, as of a couple days ago, leading the league in opponent field goal percentage at the rim, is pretty impressive.
That's a weird
LeBron was too.
Stat.
I'm sure that's not going to hold up. But there was a game I think it was the first Boston game, Doc took Shake out for defense for Danny late in the game.
Yeah.
And I can see Shake walking out off the court just being, like, pretty annoyed about it, or at least, like, disappointed. I'm not, like, causing a ruckus or anything, but just being like, I want to be out there. I'm good at defense. And I agree. I think Shake should be in there instead of Danny late in the game, because even though Danny has great hands and he's helpful in defense, he's just too slow. And whether it's like rotating or, digging down on guys or whatever it is, it's just like there's too many times when I think Danny is like not able to get to places. And so I would love to see, like, I think Shake at this point is good enough to not be offense defensed out. I think,
well, he hasn't played
enough coming
minutes
in for Seth and stuff is great, but
games,
I think, yeah. But like Shake is good. We need Shake in there, and he hasn't been playing well, but the past couple of games, but he's the best player in the league and he needs to be in there.
Yeah. So with Curry back, Milton's been down to 20 minutes a game the last two games, I think 18 and 22. I just think he's got to play more. He needs guys like him, or until he becomes like Lou Williams, where you can just get in there and turn it on. I just think the more usage he gets, the better, honestly. Like, I think he'd be so good with more usage. I would just like to see him get the ball more, like he was doing when there were fewer people in there.
I think Doc is a little bit, because Mike Scott is out and they really have no power forwards aside from Tobias and Ben, I think Doc is a little traditional in that sense of like, well, we need someone next to either Embiid or Howard. And especially when Embiid's out there, I don't think you do. I think an Embiid, like a Shake, Seth, Danny, Matisse, Embiid lineup is totally fine and can hold up. And so I would love to see more of those. Tobias got 41 minutes against Boston. Like, he's obviously a very sturdy guy. I'm not worried about like anything holding up, but I want the team is better when Shake is there, because he's such an interesting and dynamic player that they don't really have much of. We have to talk about it. Matisse's defense on Kemba, ridiculous. I mean, like that's why you have him. Like, he's obviously a lunatic when he shoots the ball.
Yeah, there was one against Detroit where I think he thought he was Michael Jordan or something.
Some bad stuff. Yeah. But I mean, that's why you have him. Like, him getting like faked out on one hesitation move and to recover and block it and go the other way with it. I mean, he's a special defender, and you have to give him as much rope and as many years as possible to figure out a competent offensive game. Which I still believe is there, because he's just too good on defense to ignore it and stuff. And then Korkmaz back, hitting shots, airballing floaters.
Can I tell you, Korkmaz, doing his thing. I fucking believe he's actually going to be like good. I got to tell you, man, I know he misses a lot of the floaters and he seems to think that he's actually...
He misses rim on a lot of the floaters.
Yes, and I know he thinks he's better than he is. But there are some real skills there and
for sure.
Feel for the game. And his release is so high and so quick that I don't know, man. Like, I think he might be, like, pretty good at some point.
I think he's absolutely an NBA player. And I think I'm a little bit worried. I'm not worried, but because they declined his option, he is expiring this year. And so I'm curious if they send him to a contender or something that in the West that like needs shooting, so for like a pick that they can then flip for something else, if they think Isaiah Joe is ready enough and they think that Korkmaz is going to walk anyway if they can't afford him or whatever it is.
They can't afford Korkmaz.
They can't afford. I mean, look, I hope Korkmaz gets his money. He deserves it.
What a world.
And then Dwight still doing his thing. God bless him. Please. Someone prevent him from dribbling. Like that need he need there needs to be.
There's,
I think that
there's
early,
one like
last
the
season
top
and earlier
of the key
this season
that he dribbled in
too much.
On. Yeah,
I think last season, earlier this season, it was like I'm not allowed to dribble, and then he was playing well and people like him, and I think he like tried it a couple times and was like, oh, I think I might be allowed to dribble again. It might be like 2012 in here, and he should not be allowed to. I mean, he had 5 turnovers in the Boston game. He obviously is going to get like 18 offensive fouls called a game. Every time he sets a screen, it's a foul. He's shoving someone in the solar plexus on every rebound, whatever it is. It's fine. But I'm willing to laugh about that, and he's going to get teed up like 20 times this season. It's all good. It's fine. Just no dribbling. Can't be allowed.
Yeah, no.
Restricted.
I agree with you. He can't get too confident. Like, I think actually we need to set up – somebody needs to set up his social media filter so he doesn't see people complimenting him. Maybe – like mute all the Sixers fans, I guess, because I think everyone's a little too in on him right now, just in terms of like what he can handle given his history. So maybe just if there's somebody who can get in there and just sort of filter out any good feedback about things that he does. I think he has to feel like
he's
shit.
He's the best rebounder in the league right now, which is pretty wild, just per minute. And you can tell when another part of the Embiid and Simmons chemistry tour is just losing their minds on the bench when Dwight does something.
Oh yeah,
it's very nice. And it's good. It's all good. It's going to get bad. I know in what way, but they're the Sixers. We must remember that in some way they're going to find a new and surprising ways to make us eat shit. And so, but for now, we are loving it. It is our January. God bless them. Beating Boston twice. Come on, this is great.
Mike, you know, Valentine's Day is on the way.
Always.
Yeah. Have you ever, I think I've brought this up at a certain point. When I lived in the Midwest, they had a thing called Sweetest Day. Have you ever heard about that? What Sweetest Day is?
Not a chance.
So it's this entire other day that is basically Valentine's Day. It's just a second Valentine's Day. It's the wildest, like there's cards, there's like whole sections in the card stores for Sweetest Day. And as far as I could tell, there's literally no difference between Sweetest Day and Valentine's Day. They just have both of them.
Hmm.
I was stunned. Well, I remember I was in a promotions meeting at the radio station I was working at. But in any case, no Sweetest Day here. But Valentine's Day is on its way, and there's only one name that is synonymous with love, and that is L.L. Pavorsky. When I think love, I think L.L. Pavorsky. When I think love, I think L.L. Pavorsky and his perfectly styled hair, $4,000 suit, and just heart full of gold. That's what I think of. So L.L. Pavorsky Jewelers is where you'll go for your Valentine's Day gift if you want jewelry, but also where you go if you want to get engaged. 210 Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners have gone to L.L. Pavorsky for engagement rings. I don't know how many have actually gotten married. I don't know how many successful engagements we've had. I only know about the 210 rings. I feel like it's got to be around 200, right? Maybe 10 of them didn't, like they said no. I don't know.
Like ended, officially ended, or like just haven't gotten officially?
Yeah, just like maybe even the engagement didn't work. Like you can buy a ring and the engagement doesn't work. So I would say maybe there's a chance there's 10 and he or she said no. You don't think?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
5 or 10?
Yeah, sure. Why not? And remember, when we get to, what is it? I think 500 of them, Mike is going to hunt down one of the couples and break them up. Get them divorced. In any case, LL is such a great guy, and that's why all of our listeners love going to him. And seriously, if you need an engagement ring, LL is the guy. Jewelry's expensive and confusing. Who the hell knows what you're buying? He knows what you're buying, and he's going to take care of you. Make an appointment to go to LL. That's the only way you're going to get an appointment, online or in person. 215-627-2252. lee@llpavorsky.com, or you can just tweet at him at LL Pavorsky. Been in business 32 years in the same location right there at 707 Walnut, just kicking ass, taking names, selling engagement rings, and donating to our charities, Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
In the spirit of B-Ball Paul, Jewelry Lee.
I like Jewelry Lee.
Jewelry Lee.
I want to go back to the Ben and Joel thing real quick about the comments about each other. Look, you can go, here's what I think is important. You can go back to every season we've ever had and they've said something about the other one. Like even the fucking bubble, when Joel was on with us, he said he wanted to play his whole career with the guy, whatever. I don't give a shit what they say. I think the most important thing that has happened this year that has made things better for them is because there are other people capable of creating and hitting shots, and like they just don't need to depend on each other as much. And I think honestly, like we can talk about pick and rolls with them and snug pick and rolls and all these ridiculous things they do. They're fine, but I just think the most important thing really is that he like that Joel can go off and have great games. And it doesn't depend on Ben Simmons really doing anything. And they can run actions with him every once in a while. And he can, you know, Joel can hit him under the rim for a dunk and all those sorts of things. But like Joel can create things that the fact that there's other people there that make Joel's life easier just makes like the interplay with them on the court less important and less strained, you know, like there's just less depending on that particular thing. And that was what was so important about the miss, you know, with Fultz and the fact that there could have been another person here that could have done that earlier, you know, that could have made him, rather than the primary guy you're running action with, like they were never going to be James Harden and Clint Capella, you know, like where so many of the offensive actions were these two guys. It just doesn't make any sense. So the fact that there's more people there that can do things that make sense with Joel, I think makes the entire thing easier for both of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. I just looked at Dwight's turnover percentage.
Yeah.
And it's 27%.
Oh, my God.
His the last, like, 10 years of his career were at 17, 18%, and now it's at 27. So I think that'll go down. I have to think it will. But it is, as our eye test looks, he's turning the ball over far too much. So no dribbling for Dwight. But I mean, I do like setting records, so maybe we should root for him. I don't know.
The last thing I'll say, first of all, I know you mentioned a couple of his limitations. I love Danny Green. Danny Green busts ass when he's out there, is always in the right spot on offense. He really is. Whether he hits the shot or not, like he knows exactly where that position player is supposed to be around the 3-point line to get that shot off. And defensively, he's like smart guy and he's strong. It just, it brings back Cove vibes. I just like Danny Green. And I like the fact that when they were down to 8 players, he played 50 minutes one night. Old fucking Danny Green played 50 minutes one night. Like he was the guy playing more minutes than anybody else, Danny Green. I just want to throw some Danny Green appreciation out there. And I appreciate the fact that people haven't really shit on him. Like he's gotten away scot-free so far this season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's all right. Like there's too much Matisse in his offensive game a little bit. Like I think he also thinks he can dribble a little bit more than he can. And you know, God bless him. But yeah, I mean, he's shooting 36% from three. That's fine. I'm happy with that. And he's good on the defensive end. He's a sturdy guy and he's a good leader. Seth Curry is shooting 56% from three. And I think that's going to hold up. I think it's going to happen. He's unbelievable. It's really beautiful to watch. Yeah, I mean, what you said about Fultz, I think, yes, that set the organization back and set the growth patterns back a lot. I think now that they've sort of cobbled together sort of multiple replacements, whether that's, you know, Tobias opening up his dribble drive game and being able to take pick and rolls and now shooting quicker, and Shake developing into this superhuman. And now Seth and hopefully Maxi continuing to improve his game and stuff. And so like those kind, it's not as predicted in that in the nascent doe-eyed days of 2017. This is what we kind of envisioned of not having as much responsibility on Ben's plate, so that he could do all the other stuff that he's excellent at. And if he stays aggressive in this way, then and other guys are hitting shots, then like. This championship team, man. Like this, the East. It's a weird season. There are only 3 teams in the East and 3 teams in the West that are over 3 games over 500. So there's a clump, and the Sixers so far have sort of separated themselves from that like middling clump, and it's a long season. But you have to feel good, and it's nice that it's not, you know. There's balanced scoring. There's guys that are doing a lot of things. Everybody's saying nice things about each other. People are hitting shots. Doc's not wearing his mask. Well, it's everything that's happening.
Is Doc's mask inside out? Am I crazy? Inside out. Now.
I think he likes that it's loose so he can like take it out and talk and stuff. But it's not serving really any purpose whatsoever.
No. There is somebody at work who like moved the mask away from their face to talk, and I was like, hey. The fuck, they work so I can hear you with the mask still on. That's how they work. It's just fucking cloth or paper. You can talk through it. And before we wrap up this portion of the pod, I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that in the Detroit game, the Sixers faced both Jahlil Okafor and Jeremy Grant. Now, Jahlil Okafor has settled into his whatever the fuck he is. But Jeremy Grant, he is watching him last night, even without the Ben stuff. He is obviously, when you look at his numbers, the fact that he's on a shitty team obviously helps because he is not as good as his numbers are. That said, even on a shitty team, for Jeremy Grant to be getting up enough shots to score 25 points a game and shooting that many threes is quite a testament to Jeremy Grant and the fact that he is a legit good player in the NBA now. And he has been, but I would have never imagined, again, even on a bad team, that he would be scoring 25 points a game in any way.
10 and 72 Sixers, the 15 and 16 Sixers.
Yep.
Robert Covington, Jeremy Grant, Rashawn Holmes, TJ, Nerlens, Jahlil, Jakar, Ish, Stauskas back in the league, Christian Wood. Like, that's a lot of current NBA players.
Yep.
That's a lot of starting NBA players.
Yep.
On that team. What a time. It was those are the glory days for us.
Let's go to the mailbag because I thought the first question was a good Simmons question to go back to what we were talking about. So Lorenzo Brown mailbag, send us emails at writes@rickysanchez@gmail.com. One basketball, one non-basketball question. This comes from Finn from Australia. He says, given that it's pretty clear Ben Simmons knows he was a moving piece in any Harden deal and was reportedly prepared to pick up the phone and be told to pack his bags, do you think that there's any chance that this is a penny drop moment similar to what happened with Iverson after he was almost traded to Detroit? Yaron Weitzman wrote in TTTT, what's the name of the book? Oh, Tanking to the Top. It is TTTT. That almost being traded in 2000 finally made Iverson get it together and find an MVP winning level. And it occurred to me Ben might react in a similar manner. Finn, by the way, from Australia. So we had thought about how he reacted to the trade stuff. And it's hard to tell how much of that affected him, was affecting his play during that whole time. I don't think it's crazy to suggest it could light a let me show you what I'm really worth thing in him. It's so hard to know what he thinks anyway. He's a mystery in many ways that way. But I don't think it's impossible. Do you?
I have no idea.
Right.
There's a chance that it no longer hanging over the team's head mm-hmm. is, a breath of just being able to exhale a little bit. I think we've talked this before, but the Ben and Joel, they've played without each other a lot and the fit is offensively never going to be perfect, but it makes it when you play without them, you realize what you're missing there as you're depending on, Mike Scott or Tony Bradley to pick up the slack of what the other guy did. And so knowing how valuable they are to each other, I think just eventually makes you realize that it's going to be us. And I think we're seeing it and I hope it continues.
Yeah, I agree. And then his second question, now this is worded in a way that doesn't, I'll explain what he means. He says, my non-basketball question, I don't think this happens anywhere here, is what is your opinion of putting hot chips in a sandwich? Now he says hot chips, he's talking about French fries. Debate rages on fish and chip Friday at my college as people deface the good name of food by putting deep fried potato in bread. Love the pod. Appreciate you guys persisting through the pandemic. This only happens, I think, in, in Pittsburgh. Do people put fries on sandwiches here in the States?
I'm sure, it happens. I like a sandwich when it comes to a deli sandwich type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like a couple potato chips, mm-hmm. fire them in there, get a little crunch. I think that's nice. But I think fries, the sort of mushiness of a fry to me doesn't add to a sandwich.
Yeah. And then I would imagine you feel the same way about have you ever seen the pizza with the penny pasta on it? Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah, I mean the sort of gimmicky pizza.
Yeah, I mean I wouldn't put pasta on pizza. It's weird. Yeah.
No, there's nothing there for me.
All right. This comes from Michael, regular emailer Michael, no longer on Twitter, Michael. He says that the Sixers are the bizarro Celtics. Embiid is Garnett, Curry is Allen, Tobias is Pierce, and Ben is new Rondo. Yes, they aren't all Hall of Famers, but Morey got in there and messed with the sliders to make it all work. As much as Ben annoys me, as long as the team is built properly to hide his deficiencies, I'm good with everyone becoming best friends and winning every game. Joel is the shining beam of love that will bring us all together. Praise be Joe. He's even smiling in his picture this year. What do you think of the Sixers as the bizarro Celtics?
I think it's interesting. I think it's certainly interesting. I think the Sixers winning every game is probably my favorite part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that there's value in that. I think, you know, Seth is not Ray Allen.
No.
Although if he keeps shooting 53%, maybe.
Well, but
Tobias is Pierce. I mean, it's certainly interesting. And
yeah.
And I don't think it's as far as a, you know, Garnett didn't post up as much as Embiid. Although I think Embiid is, to my eye, he's posting up less and facing up a lot more at the nail. And I think that makes it easier for him and hopefully easier for his body and able to not get banged as much, but still get to the line as much as he has. And Garnett at that point in his career kind of wasn't doing that anymore. But was doing the face up at the nail a lot and was automatic from there. I like it. I think it's a reasonable, I mean, it makes me a little bit queasy because it's the Celtics, but I think it's a reasonable comparison.
Yeah. I think the only one of that group, well, so remember, we're talking about past prime Ray Allen. Like Ray Allen, when he was on the Bucks, was a two guard, like the classic, doesn't even really exist now, two guard. You know, he had the ball a lot, he drove a lot, he shot a lot. When he was on the Celtics, he was a lot more spot up and was full on just Ray Allen shooter at that point. I thought Paul Pierce was overrated. I think Kevin Garnett is historically underrated. But the thing, people compare Simmons to Rondo and Jason Kidd a lot. I just think it's a really lazy comparison. I don't think he's anything like those two guys were so, when you watch them, were so classic point guard in ball extension of the body, like super tight handle, you know, even though neither of them shooting was their primary thing. Jason Kidd shot a lot, shot off the dribble a lot. I think he's just very different than those two, and comparing him to them is just like, oh, neither ones were good shooters and he's not a good shooter, so they're the same. Obviously, in this scenario, I understand not everything is perfect in the comparison, but I don't think the Ben to Rondo comparisons are like make much sense when you watch them both.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say, just as we're talking about the Celtics, we must beat the Celtics in the playoffs this year. It has to happen. It is, if we somehow lose to the Celtics again, we're already on the brink of it's not a rivalry. We're pretty close to it. They swept us last year. They beat us in five 2 years ago, although, as I will always say, it was closer than five.
We got to break up the team if we lose to the Celtics in the playoffs.
I mean, it's injuries dependent. They have to beat the Celtics. If they don't play them, I'll be a little disappointed because I want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Celtics beat us again, then it's like we are not allowed to call it a rivalry because they've just been whipping our ass. And so,
and yeah, it's not like they're, this is not like the Bulls trying to overtake the Pistons. I want to be clear, or LeBron trying to overtake the Celtics. The Celtics team, while it has done nice in the early careers of Tatum and Brown,
sure,
they're not championship team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is not us trying to get over the hump of like the team that's been taking down the conference. This is just the fucking Celtics.
If these good vibe Sixers lose to those Celtics this year, as like a, you know, second round, say like 1-4 type of seed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to choke out Brad Stevens. I'm going to go after him. It's not a violent threat, but it is like a sort of a handshake agreement that I will shake your hand and then choke you out. I think I'm not going to be able to handle it.
Wow, another threat. A podcast doesn't go too far without you threatening physical violence.
When it's going, it has to be going either really well or really poorly for me to start dishing out threats.
Yeah. Well, you've wished death upon people.
We're all dying. It's all going to happen.
Non-basketball question. I guess this is for me. What is your favorite vegan faux food? When my wife was vegan, it was faux pork barbecue from a place in Raleigh called Fiction Kitchen. It's come a long way. The Impossible Burger is a very strong replication of a regular burger. But I'm at the point in my veganism where even the replication of a regular burger seems gross to me. I would say the best faux vegan food that I've had is 20th Street Pizza in Philadelphia. They make a cheese from like coconut, I think, and it's the closest to regular pizza. I know people say this a lot, but if you did not know the pizza from 20th Street Pizza was vegan, I don't think you would guess that it was vegan. You don't have any favorites in that world, do you? You're a meat.
I don't really like a faux meat. There's a lot of soy in that, and that is not super fun. But I like vegan snacks. Mm. I order a lot of things from Thrive Market, where there's plenty of vegan and gluten-free healthy snacks, treats. There's some biscottis on there that I like a lot.
I'm not a biscotti guy. Do you dunk
it? I wasn't, and then I had them, and they're really good. They're really, really tasty.
Do you dunk biscotti, like in coffee or something? Or
I have dunked, yeah. Yeah. I think it's nice on its own also, but yeah, there's an occasional dunk.
And then final thing, this is not a question, but I just thought it was funny. I'll give credit to the name when I find it. Send us some good, quick roommate stories. We were talking about roommate stories on the last pod. Obviously your finance bro, story was very good from former roommate. Love the college stories as part of the podcast. I went to Iowa State as an exchange student from Melbourne, Australia for 6 months. And my God,
isn't this Mickey? It says it at the top of the thing.
Oh yeah, it might be Mickey. I think it's actually a different email though. I think it was a different email and I didn't put it in there. I think it's a completely separate email.
Okay.
I do. I will double check, but I think so. Or why don't you read? You're looking at it. Read the first one and I'll double check this.
I had a guy who was essentially my shadow and ended up copying the way I dressed and started using my slang and sayings. This guy was relentless in his pursuit of me. Nice guy, but it was a bit much. That is a single white female situation.
Yep. This came from Tim, by the way. Tim.
And then, all right. An overweight guy. Okay, this is two. Yep. Overweight guy that grew up in rural Illinois. When my girlfriend, now fiance, came to visit her first time meeting him, he was wearing no shirt, jeans, and a hat on the couch playing Xbox. It was disgusting. Oh, come on. Another time he was peeling an apple in the kitchen while we were both in there. Thought good on him having an apple, peeling the whole thing is a bit strange, but baby steps. He then proceeded to smother the whole thing in peanut butter. I respect that he didn't give a fuck, but man, he was a grub. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a couple more in here. He's got some weird stories. All right.
Yeah.
I don't think it compares to Mike losing his boys or the Confederate flag saga, but nonetheless, college is a weird and wonderful place. Love the pie.
It is. It is. Especially when you get roommates that you didn't pick. That's the best part, I think. Roommates that you didn't pick. You'll never, hopefully, you don't have to deal with that much in your life moving forward. But
yeah, that is tough.
All right. So we have Detroit on Monday. And then what's the rest of the week? This is look at the Sixers schedule part of the pod. Maybe I'll start putting that.
They got the Lakers on Wednesday.
Oh, big game, right? We'll have a pod that night.
Civil war in this apartment that we were unable to leave. So that'll
especially be with you being such a big Lakers fan.
I am a big Lakers fan. Alyssa is rooting for the Sixers to win this year. I think the Lakers usually lose to the Sixers or have for a while now. So I think she wants the Lakers to beat the Sixers on Wednesday. But I do think that she has been saying that she wants the Sixers to win the championship this year, which is almost worse. The sort of pity of being like, I hope you get this one.
Yep. It's just her. It's just her. It's like condescending.
Yeah, for sure. And it's nice. I mean, she has all the rings. She has all the rings, but I'm the keeper of the ring that matters, LL. And so I withhold until the Sixers, maybe that becomes the agreement. I won't ask her to marry me until the Sixers win a championship. That's dangerous.
Man. Oh, man.
That's really dangerous.
Lucky for you, they have a 50% chance every year.
50% chance any year now. Any year now.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you Wednesday night. Take care of yourselves. Are you done with TTP?
Yeah, you know Lickface.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for plan B.